Arthur Machen once wrote that strange things are lost and forgotten in obscure corners of the newspaper. This podcast will aim to prove that that statement is true.
Hello, and welcome to episode 11 of Forgotten Darkness. I'm Andrew Gable. In the summer of 1917, Champaign and Macon counties in central Illinois were thrown into a brief panic by sightings of what seemed to be a female lion, which came to be called Nellie, after a popular zoo animal at the time. As the scare was summed up in one newspaper of the day, all persons who have seen the animal declared as a full-grown African lioness, which is supposed to have escaped from a carnival company in Champaign, Illinois, 6 weeks ago. The circus train wreck, or escapee, is a common explanation for the appearance of out-of-place animals, especially in years past. It's somewhat fallen out of favor as an explanation now. In this case, it was strongly suggested to be legendary, though, as the above account says it was in Champaign. Accounts before this put it in Indiana, and a later account puts it in Decatur. This movement of the site where it happened is almost surely an indication that it never did. That said, these types of things definitely did happen. I found indications that a large cat of some type, a leopard, I think it was, captured in Pennsylvania after it menaced a farmer's livestock, was indeed an escapee from the wreck of the Walter H. Maine circus train near Tyrone around 1912. Personally, I believe that Nellie may have been a mountain lion, rather than an African lioness. As with most eastern states, mountain lions aren't normally native to Illinois, although there are certainly occasional sightings. This gets into a pet peeve of mine, which is the insistence that there's not mountain lions in certain states. Native to that state? Sure, I'll agree with that. But given that there was a fairly recent incident in which a mountain lion proved to have originated with a population in the Dakotas, was captured in Connecticut, clearly these animals roam around quite a bit. So who's to say that one never passes through your state? Unless someone captures it, there's no way to prove or disprove that definitively. At any rate, on to Nellie. The first hint of the cat's presence came in June, when a group of farmers in eastern Champaign County set out after a lion was seen. Men from a carnival in the area aided in the search. Although the hunters failed to capture the lion, it was seen several times, and tracks were found. The tracks seemed to lead in the direction of Urbana. A week later, around June 15th, it appeared to the southwest, in the woodlands lining the Embra River near Camargo-Douglas County. It was generally assumed that this cat was the same animal as that had been seen in Champaign County. As before, it was seen several times, but the numerous crowds of hunters from Camargo and Tuscola that descended on the woods failed to get a good look. The Mattoon newspapers noted that the stories of the lion were generally seen as a joke around the area, and also that, as no livestock has been killed, it would seem that the lion manages to keep alive on grass and fish. Skull lion hunts continued for several days, another party setting out on June 21st. On June 25th, Dewey Parker and Glenn Hunt of Tuscola were driving west of Camargo when they saw the lion crossing the tracks of the Cincinnati, Indianapolis, and Western Railroad near Patterson Springs. The two almost blew the muffler off their car by opening her up in an attempt to get away, the Ford County Press reported. The most famous incident with which the cat was associated, however, came on July 13th, when Thomas Gullett, or Gollop, according to some accounts, the butler of millionaire Robert W. Ourton, was attacked while gathering flowers. He was near the garage of the Ourton estate, near Monticello, in Piatt County, when the huge yellow animal rushed at him. Gullett struggled with the lion, narrowly avoiding its jaws. His chest was gashed and one leg wounded. Other workers on the estate were attracted by Gullett's screams, and when they ran up to the downed man, the lion turned tail and ran. Bleeding profusely, Gullett fainted. He was not all but devoured, as a Chicago paper put it. It was actually later discovered by a doctor that he was not seriously harmed. As should be expected, a hunting party was organized, comprised of 300 farmers. Two men who had been part of the hunt, Paul and Lee Bear, said that they saw their lion on their way back to Decatur afterwards, but had no gun to shoot at it. Robert Allerton offered a reward of $250 for the death of the lion. The manager of the estate, John Phelan, put meat out in the woods near the mansion, but the lion failed to appear. While the farmers of Piatt County were hunting the lion on the Allerton estate, another appeared in Highland Park, in the northern suburbs of Chicago. A man named E.W. Ison from Winnetka and a few friends were driving on Sheridan Road near Ravinia Park when something emerged from the trees. "All those in my car were certain it was a lion," Ison said. "It crossed the road about 25 feet ahead of us and was plainly visible in the blare of the headlights. It seemed to be tired and only trotted listlessly into the bushes to the east." It was later found, however, that this was only a collie dog, which had been trimmed so as to resemble a lion, presumably by some jokester. Back in Monticello, lion hunts on the Allerton property continued for days. The farmers hunted from early morning until late afternoon through the forests along the Sangamon River, sometimes through vegetation so dense they were required to crawl. A housekeeper at the mansion named Mrs. Shaw saw the lion again on July 15th, which sparked Lieutenant J.M. Donahue and Captain Herbert Walsh of the National Guard post in Monticello to lead a renewed search for the lion. Using their military experience, Donahue and Walsh launched a well-structured, systematic sweep of the area. From the mansion, they swept 2.5 miles west on the north side of the Sangamon River, then crossed the river and returned east to a point about 1.5 miles beyond the Allerton house, then back up to the mansion. Radio communication between each other and armed automobiles patrolling the roads was also attempted, but the overgrowth proved dense enough to block the radio signals. However, according to one hunter named Carl N. Wylep of Decatur, this well-organized operation was not necessarily quite so well-equipped. He said that all sorts of personal artillery were in evidence. Guns so old that no one knew when they were made, revolvers, shotguns, rifles, and clubs were carried in the chase for the King of Beasts. Paul Bear, mentioned earlier as having seen the lion, was initially reported to have accidentally shot the hood of a car. This incident was also reported in some papers as one in which the car's headlights were actually mistaken for the beast's eyes. Paul himself clarified the incident to the press the next day. "I was out last night and saw the lion. But I got out of the automobile and went over for the purpose of shooting the animal, but it jumped the fence. I ran up to get closer and the men I was with yelled to me to wait as they were afraid I was in danger. I turned a spotlight on and saw its body flash several times. There are 3 deer loose in the neighborhood, and I was afraid it might have been one of those, so I didn't shoot. It may have been my brother whose gun went off, sending a bullet into the radiator of a car, but I'm not certain of that as I haven't talked to him about it." A Decatur man named C.H. Waggy seemed to have seen the lion while the hunting party was in the Riverside Woods. It was reported that Robert W. Allerton, for his part, proposed bringing a male lion from Chicago for the purposes of luring the beast out of hiding. He contacted the Lincoln Park Zoo in Chicago. But Cy DeVry, lion tamer at the zoo, denied receiving any message from Allerton. Deputy Clarence Tandy of the Piatt County Sheriff brought some bloodhounds to the estate to aid in the hunt. E.W. Saster of Urbana procured a massive rifle from the sheriff's office in Fort Sheridan, one of the largest available there. Now, I'm not sure how that happens, how a random citizen just walks into a police armory and says, "Let me borrow this," and they actually give it to him, but whatever. On July 17th, another round of hunting found a depressed area in the Riverside Woodlands, which was believed to have been a bed made by the lion. Tracks of something with 4.5-inch claws were also found in a roadway near the Allerton estate. Someone, reports seem sketchy on exactly who, sent a telegram to Teddy Roosevelt, an avid huntsman. To Theodore Roosevelt, Oyster Bay, New York. You are invited to come to Decatur immediately and hunt the big lioness which is roaming through the 200-acre timber on the Robert Allerton estate near Monticello. If you come, a big hunting party will be organized under your direction. Roosevelt did not respond. The person who sent the telegram was called a joker by the press, so it's likely that the message was never expected to be answered. Robert Allerton, meanwhile, dismissed the hunters from his property, fearing that the presence of such a high number of armed men might lead to some accident eventually. His 15-person staff was keeping an eye out for it, he said, and he himself maintained a lookout from the roof of his house. He explained, however, "I am firmly convinced that the animal seen near my house is a lioness. My butler and two or three other people have seen the lioness. They couldn't all be mistaken about it. I believe that the lioness is no longer on my property, but is probably roaming along the Sangamon River. I would not be surprised to hear that the animal is in the vicinity of Decatur. My land is along the Sangamon, and there is undergrowth all along the river until Decatur is reached." He also said, in reference to any livestock being killed, "We couldn't find a person in the vicinity who had lost any, nor were any of the Allerton herds preyed on." That day, Glenn Tullison and Earl Cavanaugh were landing their boat at a spot called Allen's Bend, southeast of County Bridge in Decatur, when they saw something creeping through the undergrowth which they took to be the lion, but which could just as easily have been any number of other things. County Bridge is a now non-existent wooden bridge near what is now Taylorville Road. Tullison and Cavanaugh ran home and informed their parents. Although their account was thought to be a joke, some people in the area did indeed find large tracks, which R. Tuvell of Monticello, who had taken part in the hunts on the Allerton estate, said were identical to those found there. On July 18th, the lion was seen again by Mrs. J.G. Grafmeyer in Champaign. Hearing a noise, she got out of her bed at night and, looking at the window, saw a lion peering in. She went back to bed, and in the morning, tracks were found on the porch and also in a number of cornfields around the city. Sightings of the lion, like so many other events I've discussed on this podcast, became a hysteria early on. One could certainly argue that the faked sighting in Highland Park betrayed that it already was. Another sighting of a trim dog, a shepherd this time, came in from Lincoln, and sightings also took place in Paxton and Nyanic. Another sighting was also made in Sherman, along the Chicago and Auto Railroad line, where the foreman and a number of other railroad employees took refuge in the interlocking tower, which is a signal box for our UK listeners, when they saw a yellow-haired animal along the rails just north of the tower in some underbrush. Fearing the lion, there was soon no recourse but to call the superintendent, C.W. Bearden, who called the sheriff, who likewise dispatched a unit of armed deputies. They soon came upon the lion, which they saw was not a great cat, but a woman who had a yellow shawl on her head picking berries. The hunters felt relieved that they had been able to detect the error before firing, or there might have been a sad tragedy instead of a ludicrous case of mistaken identity. Summing up the hysteria, everybody appears to be seeing lions. On July 19th, several tracks 4 inches wide and 5 long were found on the Frank Britton farm near Long Creek in a road leading to the farmhouse. They proceeded a short way up the road before veering off into heavy underbrush. The article reporting this sighting was the first I saw using the nickname Nelly for the lion. This, as I said, was the name of a relatively famous lioness at the Lincoln Park Zoo in Chicago at the time. The next day, a near ludicrous story emerged from back on the Allerton estate. A man named Henry Etherton, a former county surveyor who was boarding on a farm nearby, claimed that he heard a dog barking frantically. A large collie was chasing the lion towards the banks of the Sangamon. The dog and the lion engaged in a battle and both were killed, the body of the lion falling into the river. Etherton claimed he had retrieved the body of the lion and was going to try to retrieve the reward from Allerton. Personally, I find this story quite dubious. A collie dog killing a lion? Really? Apparently, I'm not the only one who thought so. As the press said, he should be on some movie company's staff writing scenarios. But regardless, the lion did seem to be back in the Monticello area. appearing from the woods and frightening a young boy named Ellsworth Valentine, who was horse riding along a trail. The horse bolted. Another local resident, Jim Milliken, said that while he was working in his fields on July 23rd, the lion emerged from the woods, looked at him nonplussed, and ambled back into the woods. Tracks were found to back up his story. The Chicago reporter who wrote the account of the Valentine and Milliken encounters was apparently none too fond of his bosses for giving him the lion reporting job. He wrote, "Take me off this job here before I go bugs. Why don't you give me an assignment at the movies or watching the girls at the beaches?" Nellie's sightings were becoming a joke, and the reporter's words sum up the feelings becoming apparent in the press. Lion sightings were chronicled more and more infrequently, and were often treated in a dismissive or even mocking tone when they did appear. On the night of July 29th, Earl Hill and Chester Osborne, driving on West Main Street about 4 miles west of Decatur, had their car supposedly attacked by the lion. "There may have been a ghost, but I don't believe there was a lioness," said a postal employee named Charles S. Deerdorf, who aided in the search the next day. He continued, "I couldn't see a track in the road anywhere. There were some cows strawing nearby, and one of them may have collided with the automobile. I haven't heard of a supposed lioness eating anything." This facet had been mentioned quite a few times before, and is a definite mark against the story's truth to my mind. There were 20 or 30 cows and calves in the pasture Deerdorf mentioned, none of which had been eaten, and there was also some geese in the field as well. And recall that Outen said that none of his livestock had been eaten, and he'd heard of none in the vicinity that had. It was claimed by some that this lion lives on snakes, turtles, and fish. At any rate, several Decatur police officers who went out to the site right after the Hill and Osborne sighting claimed to have also seen the lion. Captain Witten and Officer Frank Lynch were the first to hear something moving through the brush and see the blazing eyes of the great beast. The officers went back to retrieve heavier weaponry, and when they returned, Clarence Tandy and John Howie searched, but to no avail. Another story soon appeared revealing that the lion the motorist saw that night was actually a collie dog. Just how many of those feature in this story anyway? Named Buster, owned by L.L. Glasgow, whose cows Deerdorf spoke of. His owner said that sometimes the dog rushed out toward passing cars. Later, though, some skepticism arose in the locals of the area, saying that Glasgow's dog was black and white and unlikely to be mistaken for a lion, and the photograph of the animal run in the newspapers was that of the collie dog mistaken as a lion in the Highland Park sighting earlier. At the end of July, a calf was found dead on the Thomas Jacobs farm southwest of Decatur, and lion fever once again reared its head. But Thomas Jacobs was more skeptical. "One of my calves had been missing a week. We found it last evening dead and partly eaten. I believe that dogs could just as well have eaten it as a lion. We looked everywhere for traces of the lion, but without any result. The only evidence in support of the lion story is a statement by one of the farmhands who saw it. He may have been excited at the time, but I'm satisfied there isn't any lion on my property and never has been." The farmhand he spoke of was James Rutherford, who said that he was on his way back to the fields when he saw the lion in a gravel pit on the property, only about 50 yards away from him. He was positive it was a lion, for he'd seen lions in circuses. Morris Brown, a neighbor, also saw some animal slinking away in a cornfield near his place and decreed it to be the lion. When he and some neighbors set out into the cornfield, a loud roar startled them, and they all ran off. And it appears that the stories of Nellie sort of stop at this point. Aside from a few joking articles and a few "Where is the Lion?" pieces, it seemed that the public's interest in the not-to-be-found lion had waned. Last to be found was a September article declaring that the entire thing was a hoax from the first sightings in Champaign County. But even if that was the end of the Nellie affair, it was far from the end of supposed lions in that part of Illinois. Many of the sightings were investigated and chronicled by cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman, who is a native of Decatur. In September 1955, a black panther appeared in Decatur near Rhea's Lost Bridge, and in October, It was shot at by Paul G. Myers, a game warden. 8 years later, more Black Panthers were seen throughout Champaign County. Bill Chambers of Mahomet saw a cat which appeared jet black, except for two tawny streaks under the jaws. The cat wasn't very large, about a foot and a half tall, and perhaps 4.5 or 5 feet long. Other panthers were seen around Decatur in the years that followed. 1963, 1965, and 1967 saw appearances of mystery cats, which were described as black panthers in the first two instances, and as a mountain lion of a bronzish color in the latter. Black animals once again appeared sporadically in the Decatur area in 1970. One of these, seen on December 11th, was two individuals, presumably an adult and a juvenile, based on apparent size. And the sightings have continued until the present. So what are these mysterious Illinois cats? Likely not one single answer applies to all sightings. Some were undoubtedly dogs, as discussed above. And some of the sightings describing smaller animals could conceivably be interpreted as being of fishers, bobcats, or even domestic cats. Some seem to be of mountain lions. My personal feeling, as I said earlier, is that Nelly may have been a mountain lion rather than an African lion. Certainly, the fact that the lion was always described as a maneless lioness is suggestive of that. But what of the black individuals? What are they? Melanistic mountain lions are not known to exist, and although some are of a darker color than is normal, it's unlikely those would be mistaken for black. And so the mystery of the Illinois Wildcats continues. And that's the end of this episode. A list of sources consulted for this episode can be found in the show description. If you have a question, a comment, or know a lesser-known story that you'd like to see covered, leave a comment on the podcast page, post it to our Facebook page at Forgotten Darkness Podcast, or send it to our email at forgottendarkness77f(d), all one word, at gmail.com. We're also on Twitter at Forgotten Darkness Podcast. And so, until next episode, this is Andrew, signing off.